Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the ADS 1115 voltage breakout board. Now, I'll just try and explain what it is. So it's a little, when I say a little, it's about the smallest board that I could possibly imagine. This is a little circuit PCB board, 3 millimeters by 15 millimeters long, and it measures voltages and converts the signal into a digital signal and sends it back to your processor, your board. So your processor will have output, digital outputs that can read and write, and you connect your main digital processor board, which is probably an Arduino board or something else, to this board. And this board, you can hear this dog barking. It's dog barking as I'm walking along here. So this board measures voltages. So this is a bit of a wake-up call to people of how you do it. And this only costs a few dollars US, this little board, and you wire it up. And the actual unit which does the work is sort of bigger than a sesame seed, smaller than a chalk chip. You know, it is a chip, little chip there sitting on the board. And the board has 10 little solder circle rings on a 1.25 millimeter pitch, sanded pitch, and you can put solder headers into it. And it's rather a remarkable little thing. So what it does is it has four wires, so it can measure simultaneously four independent voltages coming into it, and for the moment the volts are from 0 to 5 volts or 0 to 6 volts. Any more than that and you'll fry the poor little kitten. I don't know whether it can take negative voltages. Don't think it can. It's got to be within that range. So it measures it, and it measures it to an astonishing 16-bit accuracy. So typically that's a half a millivolt. So if you're used to having a voltmeter, half a millivolt's not that bad coming out, and having four voltmeters in a fraction of a nothing is also pretty amazing. So it basically looks as though that your wires just go to a solder lug, so there's nothing there. And so what I'm going to do is basically describe how it operates. So the general idea of this is that you want a generalized board that can do anything. And look, I'm trying to think of the way to do it now. So your Arduino board, your mega board will have about 10 analog outputs. So you can have a long wire going from whatever you want to measure. We'll measure it, and their board will measure it. I think it's 12-bit measuring. So this board's an extra 4 bits more. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 16 times. It's an extra sort of 10 times more accurate than your digital board. That's one thing to note. But also, say if you've got a voltage a fair distance away, you have to troop that wire all the way back to your board. And the longer you do it, the more you have to protect your wire, and the more the wire can act as an antenna, pick up currents, bit of a nightmare. So the idea of this is that you can put your sort of digital control fair distance away, several meters away, and have your voltmeter actually on the site measuring things. So it's going to be, that's the reasons you would want to do it. One is 10 times greater accuracy, and the second one is having the digital meter near to your source. And this is something I'll have to come back and say. So just to put it in perspective, I'm podcasting while walking at this point in time. And one of the things I have to do is just push, push, push again for, I suppose, cognitive cardiac fitness. Just keep on producing this and more fitness, lose weight, all that type of stuff. And it's a big effort. So we're getting back to this. That's why you might hear me puffing as I'm going up hills, or you might hear the odd dog bark, or hopefully not too much traffic. Yeah, so getting a game. So I've got something that I want to measure voltage that's on with an Arduino board, and the way to do it is have one of these a large distance away. Now, what you could do, obviously, is then start to, you know, it's the general idea of deploying your A to D converters in the field. So one voltage that you might want to measure is the voltage from your, what is it, your pH meter. A meter which produces an AC voltage, so an analog voltage. An analog voltage is a voltage which varies from continuously from one point to the other. So, I just want to think what an analog version would be. I don't know whether I can explain all that, or you can have. Yeah, it's a number, a digital number. Now, there's some things. If I ask you to tell me how long a piece of wood is, a stick, you could actually bring the stick to me, and that's how long it would be. Or you could write a number and just tell me over the phone. That's a digital. A digital is using electricity to encode numbers. And so you have some measurement devices which produce analog signal, and if you can get your digital signal close, it's like having a reporter in the field close to it. So one of the things I want to do is say for my pH meter, I have this digitizer sitting on the pH meter to make it actually a digital pH meter. I don't know. You can actually just buy a chip, and it's a lot of the time a lot of the chips you buy have these A to D's. So this is one look about. So what I'm going to do is just talk through you have basically digital controls, foot digital controls, an address, one which tells you, which you can program the board there. I'll talk about that in a little while. And then having done that, the address, the an alert. So you can have the board pre-programmed with a number, and essentially I just don't know, it's sort of basically almost a computer on this little chip. And so this computer can say if it your computer goes down, which is monitoring it. This little computer chip can be smart enough to send a voltage up to the alert, basically as a safety switch. So you power something up, your computer fails, this little chip can still act as a standalone computer and send a switch me off signal, say to a thermostat. So you've got something heating up, this is measuring something, and it reaches a certain value, you can say switch off, so it's called an alarm. Then after that, so going through, we're up to the sixth one, the 7, 8, 9, and 10th holes are for the input 0, 1, 2, and 3, four inputs. So let's just take those four inputs for the moment. Those four inputs can be addressed the following way. You can ask what is the voltage in any one input. Then you can say amplify that input. So say if you had, I was never going to measure 5 volts, I was going to measure 0 to 1.5. I can say, well, set your measurements so your full range is between 0 and 0.5. Something that you would think of doing. Now, so that gives you potential. If you want to measure a low signal, you can get a much greater advantage out of it. I don't, so you can sort of do that in a digital multimeter. It's known as the range. You put the range off, and it can be even more detailed. But even at 5 volt range, this can see. It's still pretty good for a little chip. Now, of course, the downside is that you've got to never let 6 volts or 7 volts or say 30 volts in. We'll talk about that later on. So if you're in a condition that has high voltages coming in, not the high voltages from your static of your hand, that seems to be okay from that. It's just a high voltage with a bit of oomph behind it. It'll fry the chip. And of course, we don't want to do that. The interesting thing is the chip is so small that you perhaps might want to have a second chip there as already, so it just turns on automatically, or something similar to that. Or you could have a basically a one chip acting as an alarm for the other chip, and so it's a voltage divider, and it measures the other voltages. And if it's switch. There's lots of ways that one could do it. So those four voltage lines in can be fantastic. Now, the other thing you can do is I can take any of those four and say, what's the difference between 1 and 3, or 2 and 0? What's the difference? So read me the difference there, and not only can it do that, you can amplify it. So if you say have your doohickey and you say put it over a 0.1 ohm resistor in a wire, either side of a wire, and you measure the voltage difference, that can give you the current. And it can do it exquisitely well by saying full gain on the difference between these two things. So you don't have to actually have a low signal. You can have a small range set by the bottom and the top signals. And so as it moves about the place, it can track it. So that's what you can actually basically do to it. So now what's happening is that... I don't know. As I don't know whether I'm getting more skilled on it, but as things are going on, I basically wire it up without thinking, switch on the Arduino stuff, look at it, and just hook it up. I hook the plus to the plus, the ground to the ground, and there's two things called signal clock and signal DA. I don't know what they are, but they're on the board, and you download the program, and you hook up the ground terminal in first, and then the voltage terminal in, and then you put the clock signal on. So as I'll go on later on this, as I walk through here, I'll talk about how NADD works. But NADD and signal communication, for a serial thing to work, it doesn't have its own independent oscillator. It requires an oscillation signal from that side. So it requires three things to switch on. It needs a ground and a voltage. This provides power. And so it's, say, 0 to 5. It means it can't measure very much above 5 volts. It can measure a little bit above 5 volts. So it's a bit stuck there. Then it needs the clock signal. And the clock signal is just really a heartbeat. And then it needs a data out. So it's just basically technically a one wire. And this one wire can receive information, set what signals, what it's doing, the gain, that's programmable. This is in all within something. Is it the size of a full stop? It's a little bit bigger than the size of a full stop. If you put 0 degrees Celsius, so the circle, that degree Celsius, that size. So it's definitely bigger, smaller than a nought in a printed stuff. Size of that type of stuff. So in that, you've got these four wires in. So now, for me, I was thinking, well, you have to have always the voltage in and the ground. You also need the signal in, and I was thinking, really, one could, the signal is just, doesn't matter how big the signal is, or to a certain extent, it's doing nothing with it, it's just measuring the signal. You could put in the DC, you could just, as far as I can see, you could just have the signal go between 3 and 5 volts in, and oscillate the signal, and that would have sufficient average voltage to be picked up and used as the voltage and the signal. I could see that you could do it somehow, but somehow we haven't gone down that path. We've got two fairly rigorous things. And I can sort of see how it does, because sometimes you may want to have something remote with a power supply at the site. So you may want to have the signal go a long way and have the power supply coming somewhere else. That goes across. And then you've got the information wire, where you write to it and write back. So you say, "G'day, mate. How are you? All right, mate. What's happening? Oh, can you whack a sausage on there, and a tomato on here, and an egg on here, and tell me when it's ready? Serve it down and come back." And it's just basically a little telephone conversation that goes between your processor and your chip. And so this is, I think, sort of a bit of a wake-up call for people looking at it. Now, there is something else called the address, and what happens is it says, Bruce, Phil, Sheila, and Becky, right? And so the processor says, "Beck, What's happening with number two line? And the other processes on the line will not respond, but Beck will respond. So you have to tell, this is the address, you have to tell the address which is what. And there's all these complex ways of doing it, and essentially different devices have different addresses, and so it's generally you can have 128. I think it's more than that. It's probably it's an 8-bit address, and so some other devices, like things with the address burnt into it at the factory, they go for full 64 bits. To get stuffed. 64 bits is a fair. 10 bits is 1,000. 20 bits is 1,000,000. So you've got 1,000,000,000,000,000,000. A few trillion devices. You'd have to be very bloody unlucky that basically someone produces some other signal with the same bit number on it. However, in this case, you've got these addresses. So you've got a general base address, the first three. I think it's actually probably more numbers. So it's hexadecimal. It's probably a 16-bit address. Final number of bits, it can be set by setting the address. And the way that you set the address is simply this sort of, sort of almost hurts to think about it. You get the address pin and connect it to either the voltage, ground, clock, or data pin. Depending on which one you do, if you put it to the voltage, it's 1. If you put it to the ground, it's 01. And if you put it to the clock, it's 001. And if you put it to the data, it's 0001. So it basically says, you've got to connect to 1, and I'll work out what you've connected it to, and I'll then therefore set my listening to it. So that's what you do. And so really I got it out of the pack, put it aside for a while because I had other things to do, then soldered up the headers to it. So the header pins are these a little bit of plastic with the 10 pins in a row. They stick through the holes, and you put the, you heat it up and you put the solder through, do various things like cleaning up the head of the solder iron, cut off the solder so you it does flux and melt, and then heat contact and put it in. Still didn't do a very good job on it. And then what you do is you connect the ground to the ground on the Arduino Mega, the positive to the positive, the clock to the clock, SD clock. So in the Mega, the SD clock is actually quite close to it's the closest pin to where you put in your USB port into your Arduino Mega. And the second one is the data. Put it in, and then in the sample code they say put wire 1 into the 3 volts. Switch it on, download. Now what happens is that the Arduino code is, fluffy bunny stuff, and I sort of almost involuntarily went to the internet, downloaded the code as a zip file. You go into tools, add a library, download zip, then manage the library. Oh, it's already installed. So I didn't really, you know, it's already installed. It's y.h, include in your sketch program. So you write this little software compiler and basically switch it on. It's got a little write to the serial port. So your Arduino Mega reads a voltage, records it, and writes it to the serial port. And works pretty well instantly out of the box. Now the thing to do is, so the idea is that perhaps what you'd have is possibly a data cable, micro USB cable, going from micro USB to micro USB. So micro USB out of your control box, and this cable. Now, the thing is that these cables are the best to do. They're the most solid and reliable and thin. Micro USB has four wires in it, and you have a a breakout. So you have one, you just plug it in. Now the advantage is that it's a micro USB is by far the best. You can do a telephone stuff, and many years ago I used telephone wires to run stepper motors on a little robotic system for fiber optics. Made the people millions of dollars. I got nothing out of it. That's life, because I wasn't smart enough. Like people, when there's money about, the people act a bit funny. They don't tell the truth. I can say, look, there's one aspect of life is that when it comes to money and free lunch, people have to think. In general, I found that over and over again. But nonetheless, the telephone thing is nice. It's like your Ethernet into your computer. They're nice, they're chunky, but they're not as flexible as the micro USB cable. Now, unfortunately, I can only find micro USB to micro USB sort of standard cables about 20 centimeters long. You really want to have sort of a meter long ready for it. So you connect it one at one end, and then at the other end, one of the things I'm looking at, and have I ordered? Yeah, I think I have ordered it in the never, or I've got it ready for an order. This is prototype boards, and so on a prototype board, you have a micro USB breakout, which is 20 cents. Your board there, which is again a couple of dollars, and then a voltage divider, and possibly toggle switches to decide whether you want to set it on the voltage divider mode, which is sort of reduced sensitivity. But so with the voltage divider, you have a 100 ohm resistor. It's hard to say what you want to do. 100 ohm resistor and a 900 ohm resistor, 10 to 1 ratio. I don't know whether you want to have little trim pots so you can trim them up exactly. I'm not quite sure about what you want to do. But the moral of the story is that you can have your wire with a voltage compared to ground. You're comparing the voltage to ground. Voltage divide and set at 50 volts. Now, essentially, you know, that students aren't going to have about 50 volts if you have it there. Now, the big question is, you know, you're going to be far, it's going to be far, far from students using. This is just a thing there. So you have this little widget. So this little thing, and out from that comes four wires. I was thinking about whether you should have banana plug holders into it, but my general feeling is that for this unit, what one wants is a micro USB cable sort of hardwired into this. Now, there's nothing worse, can I say, there's nothing worse than undoing a USB cable. It's just really fiddly, and you don't know what the lines are. I suppose you can do, but you basically want a little USB cable, and at the end of the USB tail, it's called basically a pigtail, and four wires, roughly 20 centimeters in length, and so you can put them on your kiddie's circuit. Now, it's a big question about whether you want to do it that way, but that would protect it. Another way you can do it is with an arrangement of a Zener diode, reverse bias Zener diode. So reverse bias Zener diode will have high resistance up to a point, and then it'll dramatically break down to zero resistance. So a diode typically will hold the fort. This is sort of like a your crap diode. Now, the thing with this is that when it lets the current through, that's almost a safety thing for it. The problem is that if it lets the current through, the Zener diode then starts taking, presumably, you know, your kiddie has hooked up to more than 5 volts or 50 volts going through. It's got a large current through. So your Zener diode is going to only be a conductor for so long, then burn, fail, and then no longer be a Zener diode. So you lose your Zener diode, you lose your circuit. The Zener diode has worked, say, for a second, and then it's done the thing. Now, you could have if this disaster is happening, you could have a slow blow fuse here, and the fuse goes. Even then, that's not such a good way of doing it. So what you could have is power transistor is so a power transistor can take, in general, or not power, high current transistor, they can take a lot of current through it, and it's a current amplifier, so all you have to do is supply a current to it, and it will go, or if the current isn't supplied to it, it will shut off very, very quickly, hopefully save your electronics from it. And so you can imagine a circuit like this, but unfortunately, as you build it, it's going to collapse. It's collapse. It's just the Zener diode costs 60 cents each out here in Australia, or buying it from China, you just buy hundreds of them for nothing. But you've got hundreds of diodes hanging around the place, and you want one of them, you know, one set. And then you've got to buy the transistor. Then you've got to put it together on the circuit board. And pretty well soon, you're putting in a couple of dollars insurance in time and effort and stuff like that. And you don't know whether it's reliability. And it's also, I don't know, it's just not a good bet, because it's only worth $5 each. So what you'd be better off doing is buying, you know, a few redundant ones, or having it so that you can just pull out. You know, if the student stuffs it up, it pulls out. And the ability that it has a safe probe mode. So when it's you give it to the student that's got one switch one way. When the student's got enough competence to it and it's not going to blow it, you can put it down to the other mode, and that would be about the best way to do it. So I don't know. It's hard to work out what exactly is happening in terms of that. I'm doing the actual development, and it's not necessarily a top conscious decision. There's sort of like a subliminal thing of order one of those, and we'll see. It'll be good to get it up and running. In terms of, I don't know what the calculation is. The price is so low. The ordering's going to be in this process. I'll order it in, and the knowledge that I'll have it there for when there's a hiatus, and it's ready for the next batch of stuff to come in. Like I've got various things happening for it. So hopefully that's introduced the voltage, or the A to D, the analog to digital voltage reader, the 1115 chip, and giving you an idea of how big it is and how hard it is to deploy. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.